from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out how the Madam Walker Theater is celebrating its 85th anniversary.
I'll chat with poet Norbert Kropf about his newest book.
And I'll talk with Only a Games host Bill Littlefield, who'll be in town for the Spirit in Place Festival. And there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Madam Walker Theater Center is celebrating its 85th anniversary this year. They're ending the year with a big week of events from November 9th through the 15th, including an Indie Talks discussion, an evening with Mary Wilson, who's one of the original Supremes, an IPS Day, and a 1927 Cotton Club flapper party and casino night. Travis DiNicola spoke with about the celebration.
Melina, or Molly, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
And congratulations on everything that's going on at the Madam Walker Theater for what you guys were referring to as 85.
Yes, we are celebrating 85 years on historic Indiana Avenue.
That is very cool. So, I mean, the 85th anniversary, of course, is the entire year, but it seems like you guys are really turning up the volume right now in November with a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, we have a big week of events in November. It's from the 9th through the 15th. And we're calling it a celebratory friend-raising and fundraising week. So there's kind of four large events, and it starts off on the 9th with a 1927 Cotton Club flapper party and casino night. I think of it as reliving the grand opening of the Walker 85 years ago.
Sure.
Yeah, so we'll have the vintage cars, we'll have the red carpet, there'll be a silent auction
going on.
Costumes, yes, yeah. Tuxedos, big band. Hats, the whole nine.
That's how
we'll kick everything off. Yeah.
Tell me about the music for that night. I mean, that just sounds like, I mean, that's going to be like a great
Harlem
party.
Harlem Renaissance. Mm-hmm. The IUPUI Jazz Ensemble is going to be performing that night.
Okay.
Yeah, and so they're really excited about it. We love our partnership with IUPUI, and they're bringing over a 7-piece band, and they'll also be in tuxedos.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, is this food and drinks, or just drinks and dancing?
This is food, drinks, and dancing. Carrie and Izzy's will be there and is
nice.
Sponsoring the food for the evening, yes.
It's appropriate, yeah.
Yeah. Cocktails, butlers, the whole nine.
And casino. And that's part of that too, right?
That's part of it too, yeah.
Okay.
So
how's that
gambling.
Work? Yeah,
I think we're going to have 10 games. Mm-hmm. Blackjack, I can't name them all. They'll all be there in the ballroom.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
All of that on the fourth floor of our building, so in our grand casino ballroom,
well,
which is fitting.
Sense.
Yeah, it opened as a casino ballroom.
So, I mean, in its 85-year history, I mean, was there ever like a casino at a regular basis there?
I think
at the
on
Walker,
Indiana
just,
Avenue, there yeah. were like casino, you know, houses,
right.
but
okay.
I think it was just called a grand casino ballroom. It took on many different roles back then, mm-hmm. as it does today.
Sure.
But we hear mostly that there was dancing in that room. It was lively. You know, people got dressed up, and it was a very glamorous place to be. And so that's what we're recreating for the 9th.
Well, I love that you guys are recreating that. In fact, before we went on the air, we were talking about some of the imagery you've been using in your postcards and
mm-hmm.
the marketing for this. It's really fun. It seems like you guys are having a really good time with this, sort of
going
back to, you know, the early days of the Madam Walker Theater and rediscovering its past.
Yeah, well, I like the campaign just because it's a good mixture. It's a good juxtaposition between old and new.
Mm-hmm.
You still have Madam Walker. You still see her presence. You still see her profile and the building and the iconic Walker Theater sign. But then our colors are pink and blue and yellow.
Really bright,
so it just
bright,
lets you know that we are here, we're relevant, we're fresh and energetic, and there's a lot of fun stuff going on inside.
So tell me about Mary Wilson, one of the original Supremes.
Sure. Well, so that's our culminating event. There's a couple things in between, but on the 15th...
I kind of got to jump to that.
You
I'm just excited about it.
On the 15th at 7:30, there's a theatrical performance by Mary Wilson, who's one of the original Supremes. Mm-hmm. And all of the music will be by Lena Horne. So she doesn't like to call it a tribute. It's a performance of Lena Horne's music.
Okay.
So that'll be you know, the big culminating event. We're also introducing the 100 Club at that event, which is a section in the balcony for YPs only. So
nice.
It's an exclusive, you know, kind of party social section. It'll open early for that group for a networking hour. A private bar, champagne. Yeah.
For the young professionals. And what's the group called again? The 100?
The 100 Club.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So our partners for that are Indie Hub, mm-hmm. Agave, Forte, Old Soul Entertainment. The Scene at the Palladium is going to come down.
Nice. A lot of other young professional groups you're bringing in on that.
Yeah, okay. Historic Indies involved in that. So yeah, that'll be like its own like kind of party in the balcony going on at the Mary Wilson show. So that'll be fun. The two events in between.
Yeah.
On November 13th at 6, we're hosting an Indie Talks discussion. And the title of that is Reimagining the Future of Indiana Avenue.
Okay.
And so we'll have these mini presentations from folks from the creative class that will present their ideas on the future of Indiana Avenue from whatever viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So we're just open to anything. We're just here to listen. So it could be anything like, you know, there should be elephants in the street to, you know, to just whatever idea. So
because, of course, I mean, you know, especially back in the 40s and 50s, Indiana Avenue was the place to hear jazz in town.
Right.
Lots of clubs, lots of nightclubs. It's certainly changed dramatically over the years with IUPUI and downtown and stuff. I mean, the Madam Walker has been sort of the one consistent
anchor.
Thing,
yeah,
there, right?
We kind of call it the anchor of Indiana Avenue. And it's important to realize that the avenue has changed, the city has changed, and that we have to progress with it. And so I think it'll be a fun night to have people in and to hear just what they think, what they want, what does the community want to see on Indiana Avenue. So we're just going to sit back and listen and see what the public has to say.
Very cool. And again, that's part of the Indie Talks discussion, right?
Yes, yes. That's part of the Indie Talks series. The next day, we call it IPS Day.
Yeah.
But we're bringing in students to watch $2 and a Dream, which is a film by Stanley Nelson, on Madam Walker as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So it talks about how
sort of a biography piece.
Yeah. It talks about how she used $2 to create her dream. And we're inviting the students to think about what they could do with $2. And so we'll have them come up on stage, you know, and present their idea. Like, this is, you have $2,
cool.
you know, what do you want to do? Yeah. So it's a way to engage younger students into an 85-year-old, you know, legacy and, you know, kind of get them connected and feeling a part of what the Madam Walker Theater Center is, what entrepreneurship is, and who Madam Walker was.
What type of reaction do you get from school students when they come in and they learn about Madam Walker? I mean, you've been at the Madam Walker Theater for a little while now, I know, and you know, it's such a great history. I mean, she was such a self-made woman and you know, I mean, the richest woman in America at the time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, which is such an amazing story.
Right.
And you know, I'm sure a lot of these kids, you know, have got to hear that and go, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? You know?
Yeah. Madam Walker was the first self-made female millionaire in America. So a lot of people, and especially kids, don't know that she was the first just woman millionaire. She wasn't the first Black woman. You mm-hmm. know, this is women's history.
Yeah.
And for a lot of kids, I don't know that they're still learning about this in school. So we're having to educate them on, you know, the city's history, national history, Black history, women's history. And they, you know, once it kind of sinks in, they're like, oh, she did that? You know, like, mm-hmm. what can I do? You know, so it's really, you get to watch light bulbs go off when students come in for field trips and they take tours of the museum and they see the building and, you know, they ask, did she build this? What happened here? You know, what did she make? You know, so they're starting to learn about her legacy. So it's really interesting to see students in the building.
So the building itself, it is a beautiful, amazing building, 85 years young, but I know that there's a lot of maintenance and upkeep with that. How's that all going?
Yeah, it's an 85-year-old cool building, but it's an 85-year-old building.
Uh-huh.
So it does take quite a bit of maintenance just to keep up, you know, because of its state, because of how old it is. But we do a good job. We have a good maintenance crew. And
I was in there a few weeks ago for an event that MindTrust had put together with some other mm-hmm. organizations. I was talking to a person, a friend of mine, who had never been in mm-hmm. the theater before mm-hmm. and was just blown away yeah. by the sculptural pieces that surround the stage and all of the intricate work that, you know, yeah. is a part of that theater. And, you know, was sort of wondering, like, well, how do they maintain that? How do they clean that? How do they preserve that?
Yeah, almost everything in the theater is original to 1927. Wow. The seats were replaced in the 80s, but there are 150 original colors mm-hmm. in that room. and yeah, most everything you see, there's so much detail in that room. Every time I go in there, I see something new. There's so yeah. many masks, you know, lighting pieces. There's a ton to see. And for a lot of first timers, they'll come in and they're just taken aback
sure.
by the detail and by the architecture and by the colors. Yeah, and it does take quite a bit of cleaning.
What about for you? I mean, you know, working in that building, in such an interesting historic building with so much history, and you get to see the behind the scenes, the backstage stuff, if you will. You know, is there a part of the building that the public doesn't see that you think, man, I love that part of the building or that corner or that space or that wall or, you know?
I guess what's most interesting to me, I'm thinking of two things, but yeah. one, every inch of that building is used for something. Mm-hmm. And I think once you get a real tour of the building, and we have tours with Mr. Ridley, he's been living and working on Indiana Avenue for 90 years.
Wow.
It's an amazing experience to have a tour with him. He'll make you cry. But you can literally walk, you know, from window to window, wall to wall in that building, and it's been used for something. And you can go from room to room and think, wow, this product was made here. This law office was here. Proms were in this room, you know, like there's history in every room. And the one room I'm thinking about is our museum that people, I think don't realize is there.
Yeah.
So it's also in the building, but you have to come out and go through another door to get to it. But we have found out that we are the biggest collector of, original artifacts by Madam Walker.
Wow.
We've got, combs, products, tin cans, advertising blocks, images of the opening, images of Indiana Avenue. We've got a ton of stuff in there. It's just really interesting to look at. It's just really interesting to be in that space and see, you know, what people touched, what people made. So I would encourage folks to come over and take a look at our museum.
I want to do that. You know, I bet I've been in the building, you know, dozens of times, if not 100 times over the years,
yeah.
and I've never been in that museum. I definitely need to check that out.
For a while, it was a space that we, you know, put things that we knew were important. So we didn't know what to call it, didn't know, you know, what it should be used for. But last semester, we had a NIUPUI museum studies class come over, and one of the conservationists at the IMA, and they spent a semester digging through the building. So they looked in the museum and told us, you know, this should be, you know, placed and kept this way. This is important. It should be in this space. So they scoured the building, created a whole database for us. So we now know what we have. And we know how valuable the things are, and we know how far they date back. So now I'm comfortable calling it a museum. And so now it's open, you know.
Travis DiNicola with the Madam Walker Theater. For more information about the Walker, visit walkertheater.com. Theater is spelled with an R-E at the end. It's walkertheater.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Former Indiana Poet Laureate Norbert Croft has lived a life centered around words, but music and photography fascinate him as well. He's written a new book, Songs in Sepia and Black and White, which includes black and white and sepia photographs by Richard Fields. The new book also pays tribute to poets from Homer to Virgil to Walt Whitman, Emily Dickinson, and Wendell Berry, and to singer-songwriters such as Woody Guthrie and John Lennon. They also explore the poet's Indiana-German heritage, question ethnic prejudice and social conflict, and praise the natural world. Norbert began his conversation with Sharon Gamble with a reading.
"Are you okay? Come home," wrote the brother to his third sister in the great Louisville flood of January 1937, and she came home. Came back across the Ohio River to the hill country and worked as a secretary in a lumber company. A few years later, met the man who became my father. They stayed home until called into another world. More than 70 years after the floodwaters receded, the yellow telegram floats in a drawer of my desk. After 34 years, I came home from New York. Nobody sent me a telegram. Home called in other ways. What if she had not come back, had not listened to the command that must have come from her mother? Is there not always a what if whenever there is a flood? Some heed the call and some do not. Some know home as where you must go when they call you back after your time in the city. Others know home as the place you must get beyond, where you shrivel and die if you go back. Some ride the waters and settle wherever they recede and say they never look back. Some cut off all ties and face away. Some go back and look within. Some close off. Some stay open and ponder what-if telegrams.
It strikes me that we live in a very assimilated world, that we live in a world where with you turn your computer on and in a few keystrokes you can be connected to somebody on the opposite side of the known world, no matter how far you've literally traveled. You can be connected to people far away, and boundaries sometimes don't matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you are a guardian of heritage.
Yeah, and being rooted and finding roots has been very important to me. But I sense about this book that I do that in one sections 1 and 4, but in 2 and 3, where there are tributes to authors from all over the place,
right,
including America, and in the music poems, which are set in different parts of the country, that I am able to go out and beyond and show that in what I've always been about, it really is showing that all places are one place, in a sense, and that humanity has, we all have many things in common, though there are cultural differences and historical differences still at the core. We're all human beings. And unfortunately, in a lot of our discourse, especially the political discourse in this country now, we seem to have forgotten that we're all part of the human family, and we don't know how to talk to one another anymore, and that's a shame. So there, I'm not primarily a political poet, but I couldn't help but relate that to what we're talking about, because discourse is really very important. It's an academic term, but it's how we talk and relate to one another,
and
that's important.
But every time you have two people together, you have politics.
Yeah.
Because it means differences of opinion.
Oh, sure.
Or not literally means differences of opinion, but it
different
it
views
deals with
often
how you view your role in the world.
That's true.
How did you decide, other than that you had reached a critical mass of poems in these four subject areas, how did you decide that the family poems, the poems about writing, the blank sheet of paper poems, the poems about being practically with the band, and then the poems more or less about Southern Indiana belonged in the same book?
Well, I had for a good while thought about putting together a book of poems focusing on music, many different kinds of music ranging from classical to jazz to blues to folk rock and, you know, various permutations of all of those. But I decided in the end that putting a whole book together like that might, the result might be a little bit thin. It wouldn't be go deep enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, look, I've got these poems in practically with the band. And I knew that I was collecting uncollected. I had a lot of uncollected poems, tributes to authors. I think that's something we do more and more as we get well into our 60s and look beyond and see that there's not that much time left and want to say where we came from and give thanks. But I sensed then that I could, if I had this Indiana core, then I could go outward from with the outside of it, and it would all work together somehow or other. And so I experimented with that, and I was pretty pleased with the way they worked together. So, I mean, it came in stages the way most things do, and I have to live with poems for a while before I can see how they will live together. They have to learn how to speak together, or I have to learn how to let them speak together in the best possible way to make the best book. I'm not a kind of poet who just says, oh, it's 3 years since I had a book. I will take what I wrote in those 3 years, add a few earlier ones, and then put out a book. No, I want an overall arc. I want a narrative. I'm by and large a narrative poet. I certainly write lyrics and some dramatic poems, but I want the whole book to have a narrative arc, to tell a whole overall story. There should be a development. There should be a kind of journey. It should go someplace. It doesn't have to be external where it goes, though. At best, it isn't, probably. Or maybe it should be both external and internal at the same time. So I love that challenge, by the way. I love putting things together. I always have.
It's like creating the world.
It is. It is.
It's the poet God.
I'm reading quantum physics and going in a different direction right now.
Wow. Oh, I can anticipate a future book. You, in the preface, quote Wendell Berry as talking about being an apprentice of creation.
Yeah.
I love
that phrase.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's so intriguing what you said about how being a poet, being an adult poet, no matter what the actual chronological age is, might be a little different from first finding your voice a few decades ago.
Yeah.
Talk about that to me.
Well, Wendell Berry has been a favorite poet of mine since I started writing poems in January of 1971, after we moved to the New York area. And he has that strong sense of place, and he has a strong religious sense. And, you know, the talk of creation there. I love the notion that we are apprentices no matter how long we write. And if we think we're not apprentices anymore, I think we've lost something and we're in danger. Because if we think we're all we're masters and nothing but a master, I just think we're seeing ourselves as too self-important. You know, so to me, it's all a process of discovery, and it never ends. And that's an image of life itself. So we're an apprentice, and then a creation brings in something. Well, we create as artists, but he means the larger creation in the world that we are given as custodians, and sometimes we're not such good custodians. And so I love the religious, or if you will, maybe spiritual dimension of that. And that's a very key part of poetry to me. And I'm writing more and more spiritual meditation type poems, and actually I'm working on a collection of those. My wife insists that I ought to do that because she sees all the poems that I write every day. You know, that sometimes she'll wake up and she'll have a poem or two or three to read. And then I have to judge her response and calibrate it and see what she really means.
Interpreting your muse.
Yeah, that's right.
You're a co-custodian of this process with, you always have been connected to, attracted to, visual artwork as well as music,
yes.
And in particular, Richard Field's photos are featured in this book.
Yeah.
You've worked with Daryl Indiana,
Daryl Jones.
He could be called Daryl Indiana. I just said something about how synonymous his images are.
Yeah.
Where do you start with that?
That works different ways. With Daryl Jones, I was invited into that project kind of late through Daryl. He'd finished, or so we thought, his Polaroid manipulations and transfers. And so Indiana University Press gave him approval to send me the images and see what I could do. They had seen a book of mine, which they liked, and that worked. Then he wrote some more. But in a sense, I was the illustrator. In the next book I did with IU Press, and these are all in the Quarry Book series about books about Indiana, and they need to be trade books, and the trade books need to be illustrated, so therefore it's necessary to work with photographers. But I had been doing that.
Well, that's a happy rule.
Yes, I had been doing that before. I started off working with German art early on.
Right.
So then Dave Perini, I selected him to be, with the press's approval, the editor's approval, Linda Oblak, to provide photographs. And I knew Dave because he worked with the Herald in Jasper, Indiana, my hometown, for 10 years, was the head photographer. And I said in my proposal that I would go around with him and bring him to sites which had inspired the poems. Some of his work he'd already done. He'd already done a feature on one of my books, the one with which had a Darryl Jones photograph on the cover. And so that worked out. You know, that was a different kind of collaboration. And then thirdly, I thought of Richard Fields for this new book, and I think it's the photos and the poems really work beautifully together. But Richard had done at least half of these poems before we started working together. I mean, photographs, working with the Indiana DNR for 23 years. Mm-hmm. And I knew his wonderful book, Indiana from the Air. I just loved it. And I just always know there's a kinship. I feel it. You know, if you don't feel it, it ain't there. You know, I mean, this is not a kind of thing that you govern
you can't
completely
force it.
By the head. Yeah, and you can't force it. So those, you see, now I took Richard down to southern Indiana again. He lives in Spencer, which is southern Indiana, and he has a Rockport connection. I think a grandfather of his was a minister there. So he had a real feeling for the place. And Darryl Jones has southern Indiana connections, too, along the Ohio River in southwestern Indiana. Part of his family came from a little island right there. So that was a somewhat different experience. I mean, to go around with Dave Perini, who already worked there and lived there, was one thing. To go down with Richard, who lived in Spencer, has lived in Spencer, but has been around southern Indiana, was a different kind of experience. They have different visions. And so, but I think he was perfect for this book, and he's just a marvelous photographer. Yeah.
There's a very... not antique, but nostalgic atmosphere mm-hmm. about a lot of his photographs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, others have pointed that out. I mean, it's not the first word I would have used, but maybe that's because that's part of me, you know, and I have a feeling for things of the past, and especially for the rural world and the small town world. But, I mean, he does some good things of Indianapolis, too, in here. I love what he captured of Indianapolis. He gets a beautiful one of the Arts Garden of me with Monica Herzig and her acoustic project before we began a performance there. And a beautiful one of freight trains coming through downtown Indianapolis.
I love that.
We went together and I said, let's go around this corner and just look. And a train came
with
by.
The steam.
And that behind it were the so-called skyscrapers. It was a beautiful contrast, I think.
Yeah,
wonderful.
And they're still here. We think freight trains are a thing of the past.
Oh,
but
as you allude
to in some of your poems, you still hear them, especially living downtown.
Downtown Indy freight
definitely
trains.
Definitely hear them,
That's that one poem,
Could I get you to read us out with Songs in Sepia and Black and White,
sure.
The title poem for this collection?
It's actually the first one in the book, and it's where the title is a line that is repeated in it. And I just decided that was the perfect title for a book, which is about... which involves photography, which involves song, music, and song is a traditional title or name for a poem, too. And black, sepia and black and white are photography images, but that's also the past. And the past is so important in the present in my poems. Songs in Sepia and Black and White. There was a handsome man who parted his hair down the middle, a man who left way too young. Died at 33, father of 6, the eldest only 12. This man played the mandolin, sang German songs as a tenor. I sometimes see him in sepia, sometimes in black and white. I sing fire sage for Dorothy, miniature irises and roses climbing a white trellis, shallots growing in her garden and rhubarb stalks at the edge. Lettuces in her cold frame. Memories of a father who died when she was 6. Memories of a mandolin and tenor voice. Stories and irises for me, the grandson, from Frank's late daughter, Dorothy. Songs in sepia and black and white.
Sharon Gamble with poet Norbert Croft. Norbert, former Indiana Poet Laureate, has a new book of poems, Songs in Sepia and Black and White. Find out more about the book and about Norbert's readings and performances with musicians at craftpoetry.com. And that is spelled K-R-A-P-F, poetry.com. Again, K-R-A-P-F, poetry.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon?
You know what time it is?
Let's see. It's the time when no more Halloween candy?
Whoa. It's actually time for Spirit and Place Festival events and lots more things
That's very exciting.
I know. We'll have things you can do to burn off your Halloween extra poundage on our calendar we call What'll We Do?
There we go. So speaking of Spirit and Place, there's so many cool events
going on. I know. I'm really excited about one. I just love the picture. I'm sorry. I wouldn't be excited without the adorable picture in the Spirit and Place festival brochure. There is a picture of the cutest pony ever seen in the history of ponies. To promote event number 34, which is called Horseplay, which is coming up on Saturday the 10th from 1 to 4 at Meridian Street United Methodist Church. And it's about reading skills.
Hey, I mean,
yeah,
how cool.
You can listen to a story alongside Prince the Horse, meet his friends, who are real horses, play horse games.
Miniature horses, I've heard.
And don't forget to check out the complimentary concessions. And you can catch a shuttle from a local community center. So, so we're sneaking some literacy in there, but it's all about horses, particularly small horses.
Books and horses.
Play.
What more do you need?
Books and horses.
Horses.
I know. So
that's what I love about Spirit and Place.
Find out more at spiritandplace.org. And, horses, pumpkin chunking. It's all about play this year.
It's all about play. Mm-hmm. And what a great theme that is. And you know, I got to say, that's one of the funnest things about looking through the catalog or browsing the online site for Spirit in Place is that it brings together so many sort of different and disparate elements and organizations that you wouldn't think would always have the direct connection. And yet through Spirit in Place, they do.
That's right.
How cool is that?
Love it.
Hey, a concert that's going on Friday night, November 2nd. So if you're listening to us Saturday morning, sorry you missed it, but Sean Mullins is going to be performing down in Fountain Square. And this is part of Mark Butterfield's Acoustic Cafe series. You can always get more information at IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com. But Sean Mullins is just a great singer-songwriter, and this should be an awesome show. It's at the Headback Theater on North Alabama Street, actually. So they've moved this one out of Fountain Square, and so it's at the Headback Theater. So make sure you check IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com for more information. The show starts at 7:30 Friday night.
Now, maybe you weren't able to score a ticket for the recent TEDx extravaganza here in town.
Yeah, it sold out like 5 weeks before
it happened.
I know,
very fast. It was a flash thing. But one of the interesting sort of follow-on activities is still available to you. It's a new web portal, so to speak, called neighborland.com. And what it does is to connect people together at the neighborhood level. And the intention is to spark conversation. So you can go there and fill in the blank with questions like, I want blank in my neighborhood. You can like other people's ideas by clicking Me Too. And this is a great way to start micro conversations at the micro level. We all want Indianapolis to be a great place, but that starts at the very micro level of your very own neighborhood. If you go to neighborland.com/questions/design learning, you'll get the whole scoop about that.
Very cool. Hey, how would you like to watch the election results come in on election day with the president?
I would love to.
Well,
how do I do
can,
that?
You can down at the President Benjamin Harrison home, and you can do it with President Benjamin Harrison because
oh, you rat.
Part of Election Day Live from Delaware Street. It's a fun event that they do during every Election Day, and the Tuesday, November 6th is no different. You can experience basically the excitement of Election Day with President Harrison, as well as his wife and butler and cook and seamstress, who will be greeting guests throughout the day. Tours start from 10 a.m. and go until 3 p.m. at every half hour. Check out the house. And of course, these are reenactors, not really President Benjamin Harrison. But it's a great way to check out a beautiful home and some great Indiana history on Election Day. How fun is that?
Excellent. Hey, don't forget that the 14th annual Ann Katz Festival of Books and Arts is going on at the JCC with an amazing assortment of events. There are films, there are talks, there are all sorts of cool things, including next next Thursday, November 8th at 6 o'clock, Indy Reads in the Junior League, which is a family literacy workshop. You can learn how to read with your children, and you might say, oh, I know how to do that, but you will gain access to some specific techniques and timing and studies that will help you make the most of your book time or your storytelling time and help your child establish great reading habits, make them be readers for life. It all starts with just this great free event on November 8th, 6 o'clock, Indy Reads in the Junior League Family Literacy Workshop.
Very cool. I'm really excited about all the different events going on as part of the NCATS Festival of Books. I mean, lots of great author events, workshops, movies, exhibitions. It's all very, very cool stuff that the JCC does.
And you're doing something with Matthew Tully on Wednesday the 14th. Tell us about that.
I am very excited about that. I get to interview star columnist Matthew Tully about the book that he wrote. Essentially, it's the collection of articles that he wrote about IPS, and mainly Manual High School, but also other issues in IPS, that he wrote over the course of about a year and a half, and then that book was collected and came out last spring. And so I'm going to be talking with Mr. Tully, interviewing him about education issues in Indianapolis.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. Speaking of local productions and local, a lot of local hard labor that results in something beautiful, there's a TV special called Young Stars of Ballet that's coming up on our sister station, TV 20. Young Stars of Ballet gives you a peek into the world of ballet through the eyes of future stars, and this is a collaboration with the Indianapolis City Ballet. You'll get to see more than 100 young dancers performing a finale, but you'll also take the journey with them and know what the training is like, what the warm-ups are like, what the rehearsal process is like, and what draws these young folks to dancing. Again, that's coming up on November 15th at 9 o'clock, and it's a local production called Young Stars of Ballet.
I'm really excited about that. I saw that finale live, and I've known that and that was about a year ago or so, and I know that they've been working on this documentary for quite some time, and it's going to be great to finally see it.
I know.
Hey, something else I'm excited about seeing is the new play by James Still, The House That Jack Built. This is opening at the IRT. It runs through November 25th, and essentially it's a sort of a short play, about an hour and a half, and it takes place during Thanksgiving in Vermont, and it's a family story with certainly some serious issues, but what I keep hearing from a lot of people is that it's also very funny and very engaging, and that it's just a beautifully written contemporary play. And very excited to see this, The House That Jack Built, opening at the IRT.
Well, now that we happily have our ISO musicians back on stage, we're looking forward we're looking forward to the November 2nd and 3rd concerts. It's the German Requiem. And who's on the podium? None other than former music director John Nelson. John Nelson back on stage with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra and the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir, as well as Aga Miholai and Nathan Berg.
Cool.
So great, great performance. If you've never heard the Requiem live, you need to go see this.
Hey, last thing I've got is next week we've got a group of some of the world's best magicians that are coming to town. And the reason is it's not actually a conference, it's sort of a pre-conference. There's a lot of talk about having the Society of American Magicians have their big annual conference here in Indianapolis, maybe in a year or so. And so this is kind of a pre-meeting. But as part of it, there is going to be a public magic show that is going to take place next Saturday, November 10th at the Downtown Hilton Hotel, 5 o'clock, and it should be lots of fun. And the lineup is kind of a surprise, but I can tell you that I've heard that some of the best magicians in the world are going to be in town for this conference and might just be showing up for this performance at the Hilton, November 10th at 5 o'clock.
Wow.
Yes.
They might steal your breath
away.
I heard it here first. Last thing I have, the Encore Vocal Arts Ensemble is performing an All Saints Day concert this Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Pleasant View Lutheran Church, which is at 801 West 73rd Street. And it celebrates appropriate music for All Saints Day. More information at encorevocalarts.org.
Sharon, magicians don't steal your breath away. They make it disappear.
Oh, I knew there was something wrong with that. Well, I don't think we're going to make anything disappear, but we will make arts events appear.
That's right. Next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Produced by WBUR in Boston, the NPR radio show Only a Game, now heard at 1 p.m. on Sundays here on WFYI. Each week, host Bill Littlefield explores the world of sports from a public radio perspective. And this week, he's coming to Indy for a Spirit and Place event and to watch a Colts game. Travis DiNicola spoke to Littlefield by phone.
Mr. Littlefield, we're looking forward to having you in Indianapolis on Sunday, watching a Colts game, being part of Spirit in Place.
Yep.
Your first time here in Indy, or have you been?
It will be my first time in Indianapolis, yes.
Well, you know, it's a sports capital of the world from what some people say.
I will be delighted to experience that.
Well, good. Well, we're looking forward to having you here. I've been a fan of your show for many years. Enjoy listening to Only a Game, of course. It's going to be great.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome to have you here in town. I know a lot of people are looking forward to it. Tell me a little bit about what it is that you're going to be doing for Spirit in Place with after the Colts game.
Well, my understanding is that it'll be pretty wide open. We're going to be talking about the place of play and sports and in people's lives, and that's about as wide open a subject as I can imagine. Sometimes when I go out to give talks at schools and libraries and places like that, people ask for a title, and I try and stick with it's only a game, except when it isn't. because, of course, as a culture, we take our games exceptionally seriously. Our rooting interest is enthusiastic, to say the least. Millions and millions of dollars are bet on all kinds of different sporting events. And then at the other extreme, you have people who just enjoy sports for the pleasure and camaraderie and exercise that they provide. So, you know, any number of things are open for discussion, I would think.
You know, it's still a little bit of an anomaly to have a whole lot of sports on a public radio station or through NPR. Was there, when you first started getting involved with this and trying to take the show national, was there any pushback regarding that or a sense of, oh, you know, national public radio listeners, they're not sports fans?
No, it was quite the contrary. We did some research on this, and we found out that public radio listeners very certainly sports fans, and on that they are more likely than the population in general to be involved in sports. They're more likely to be members of gyms. They're more likely to be playing all sorts of things, to fast pitch softball, to rowing on the river, to, you know, whatever mm-hmm. you pick. Martial arts, the whole thing. Public radio listeners tend to be very active and actively involved in all sorts of competitive activities and sports of all kinds. So that was a bonus when we started finding out that sort of thing. But the real reason for starting the show nearly 20 years ago now was that we felt there was an opportunity to tell good stories well, and the stories happen to be set in sports, and mm-hmm. so we took advantage of that opportunity.
And I think that's one of the things that I enjoy the most with your show, the stories that you hear, especially about those sports that maybe aren't covered as often in other media, whether it's, you know, ping pong or croquet or, you know, what have you. But I do think you need
wife
to do
carrying,
more on croquet.
Skillet tossing, yes.
Yes, exactly. So I got to ask you, I mean, you're obviously a fan of sport, a fan of games, but do you have your own favorite sport that's always a go-to for you?
Well, first of all, I'm a fan of stories more than anything else, and mm-hmm. happily, the stories are available everywhere, and I'm just as likely to find them if I go to the racetrack with a bunch of people who live in a nursing home as I am if I go down to Fenway Park and you know, sit in the
sure.
dugout with some guy who makes $8 million a year. The stories are everywhere, but over the course of the years, I've become a serious soccer fan, and that's partly because I had the opportunity to coach my kids playing soccer when they were growing up, and partly because the people in the soccer community, team, the men's team, professional teams here in Boston and elsewhere, mm-hmm. have been so incredibly open. The opportunity to talk to people, the opportunity to spend time with people, has been great. And it's partly because, of course, the media doesn't bug soccer players nearly as much as it bugs baseball, football, basketball, and hockey players in our culture.
Well, now, and let me ask you about soccer, because that's a sport that, of course, many people say is, you know, great game to play, difficult game to watch, but obviously you're finding the stories in there that make it interesting to you, at least. Help me understand maybe a little bit more of what I should be looking for in a soccer match.
Well, it would be a long answer if I were to try and go into the whole thing, but one of the things that fascinates me is that soccer is, without any question, the world game. You go all around the world, South America, Africa, Europe, Asia as well. It's the game that unites people more than any other. And just so many times when I've gone to games and I have an opportunity to speak to people from other cultures or had an opportunity to sit next to people who knew a lot more about the game than I do and learn something about it as, you know, as the game has gone on. But it's a fascinating combination of reflexes, conditioning, intelligence. And one of the things I like most about it is it requires incredible patience. Mm-hmm. If you watch, for example, Barcelona play, they have infinite patience. And that, more than anything else, I think more than their skill even, is what wears teams down and allows them to win so often.
Well, when you're coming to Indianapolis, I mean, of course, there's soccer fans here too, but it is a football town right now, especially with Andrew Luck playing well for the Colts.
You understand he used to have a pretty good quarterback out there before Luck, too.
I've heard of him. Memory is fading quickly.
Not in Denver.
Not at all. No, you've still got lots of Peyton Manning fans out here, but certainly people are excited about Mr. Luck. Did you have a chance to see any of the game that went into overtime against the Titans?
I've been keeping track of Indiana's fortunes because I wanted to know what I could expect when mm-hmm. I got out there on Sunday. You know, if they'd been 0-7 or 0-8 or something, I might have canceled my flight. But yes, I've been paying attention, and it looks like they got everybody else right where they want them at midseason.
Exactly. Hey, now the space that you're going to be giving the Spirit in Place discussion that you're going to be taking part of that in is the Athenaeum in downtown Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Great historic building, absolutely gorgeous space that has lots of events that goes on through the Athenaeum Foundation, including recently their German Fest. One of the big highlights each year at German Fest are the wiener dog races. Have you heard about these?
I have heard of wiener dog races. I'm not sure I've ever witnessed one in person, but that sounds like an added attraction for sure.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be any going on the weekend you're here, but they are. It's a big event every year. It just took place about two weekends ago, and six dogs at a time, and usually maybe one will run, and the rest just kind of hang out and sniff each other, and but they have it throughout the day, and hundreds of wiener dogs around town participate.
This sounds like the kind of sport that only a game should certainly cover.
I was thinking that. So
yeah,
when
absolutely.
You're at the Athenaeum, make sure you ask the people there about their wiener dog
I will
races.
Do that. I will arrange for a return trip on the appropriate wiener dog day.
That would be great. Hey, before I let you go, and I do appreciate your time, with Indianapolis, I mean, we do have a rich tradition here of sports, amateur sports capital of the world, it's been referred to. Of course, there's the 500, Colts, Pacers, the Fever just won the national WNBA.
Yes, and congratulations on that. Terrific. I was particularly engaged by one story of a Fever's fan who announced to the police that she was loaded and was making no apologies for it because she was celebrating the Fever.
I heard that on your show the other day. You know, you gotta love a fan like that, a fan without apology, right? So is there, for you, anything that you know, aside from the opportunity to participate in Spirit in Place, that you're looking forward to being able to see or experience or learn about more regarding Indianapolis and sports and our stories?
There's one non-sports related thing I'm looking forward to. I'm told that there's some architecture out there still connected with Kurt Vonnegut's father.
Well,
I'm a great Kurt Vonnegut fan, so a kick out of that, I'm sure. But mostly, it's an opportunity to meet some folks and invariably when I do this sort of thing, there are people come up to me and say, hey, I have a great idea for a story for your show. And more times than not, they're right. It's a great idea. And eventually we get to the story.
Very good. Well, the building you'll be in, the Athenaeum, was designed by Kurt Vonnegut's grandfather.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to that.
Yeah. So, hey, last question before I go, before you go as well. What'd you think of that World Series?
It was over too quickly.
Yeah.
I have to say I'm a big Jim Leland fan. Had an opportunity to speak with him a couple of times in spring training years ago, at one point when he was still managing in Florida. And I was sorry the Tigers didn't put up a better show.
Mm-hmm.
Four straight is too quick. And especially when you're in the position of not having a home team to root for, you root for a good series.
Sure.
Before you root for a good story. And 4-0 is not a great story unless you happen to be a big fan of San Francisco.
Yep. Yeah, it was a tough one to watch for us Tigers fans here.
It was definitely a tough one for Tigers fans. They didn't get any runs.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Littlefield, real pleasure to chat with you and looking forward to seeing you on Sunday. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'll see you shortly.
Travis DiNicola with Only a Game's host, Bill Littlefield. You can listen to Only a Game Sundays at 1 p.m. on WFYI Radio. You can watch the Colts game this Sunday, November 4th, with Bill at the Athenaeum starting at 1 p.m. This Spirit in Place event, It's More Than a Game, will start after the game at approximately 4 p.m. It is free, but you do need to register ahead online. Visit spiritandplace.org for more information, and is spelled out, spiritandplace.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week at our new time, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturdays at 7 a.m., when I'll get a preview of this year's International Fest.
I'll chat with the new director of the Indianapolis Museum of Art, Charles Venable.
And I'll get a preview of the Indiana Recycling Coalition's annual event that features lots of art. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.